Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. Happy Friday, everyone. I want to do a short one today that it's a quick read, but it's just a Twitter thread that I've been saving. I've had a stack of these, my bookmarks and saved for later folders are getting really, really out of control lately. So I need to start going through these, and there's so many good little snippets in here. This one's actually by Real VJ. So it's VJ Boyapati, who we had on the show very recently. Is Tuesday's episode. I think it's Crypto Chat number 7. I think that's right. If it's not, don't hold it against me. I'm not going to look it up right now. This one is a Twitter thread from, my saved thing says 15 hours ago, but it's like a couple weeks back. And it's about the reframing of the concept of scarcity and how it made scarcity and the idea of Bitcoin possible in the Austrian theory. Without further ado, I don't want to go too much into it because it is a short one, and we'll talk about it very briefly afterward, but this will probably be a much shorter episode than I've had. I've had like 40-minute episodes all week, save for our hour and 10-minute interview with VJ. So let's go ahead and jump right in to VJ Boyapati's Twitter thread on scarcity and Bitcoin. Scarcity seems like such a simple concept, but do we really understand it? Sometimes we need to reframe a concept before its full potential can be unlocked. How was the concept of scarcity unlocked for the digital age? At least as long ago as the 16th century, economists, in particular the Spanish school of Salamanca, understood that scarcity played a very important role in how money gained its value. Money was more valuable where it was scarce and less valuable where it was abundant. The modern Austrian school inherited the mantle of hard money economics from the school of Salamanca, and one might have imagined that Austrian economists would have been the first to anticipate and understand the emergence of Bitcoin. Alas, it was not so. Why? Murray Rothbard, the irrepressible student of the great Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises, even went so far as to assert that money can only arise if it begins as a useful commodity, such as gold or silver. Quote, "The most fundamental part of Mises' regression theorem, that nothing ever becomes money out of the blue, that it can only emerge as money as a unit of weight of a useful market-produced commodity, almost always either gold or silver." End quote. Ever since Rothbard's interpretation of the Misesian regression theorem, the scions of the Austrian school have associated scarcity with the physicality of gold. It's real, it's tangible, it has intrinsic value. The intangible nature of Bitcoin completely befuddled many Austrians. In the late 90s, Nick Szabo invented BitGold, which was a critical step on the path to making digital scarcity possible. His invention was based on a brilliant reframing of the concept of scarcity as, quote, unforgeable costliness. Instead of viewing scarcity in terms of a dearth of some physical substance, Nick Szabo imagined scarcity as the property of being expensive to produce and for this cost to be hard to fake, or said another way, easy to verify. We can see that this reframing of scarcity also applies to precious metals. It is extremely costly to produce gold. Gold is the product of the cosmic collision of stars, and it's very easy to verify that something is in fact gold, and thus required massive energy to produce. With this new reframing of scarcity in mind, we can then ask, in the digital realm, where most things seem easy to copy or inexpensive to churn out, how do we create something that requires a large cost to produce and whose cost is easy to verify? Adam Back made the ingenious leap in his invention of Hashcash in 1997. He recognized that hashing, the one-way transformation of arbitrary data into a fixed-size, essentially random bit string, could be used to produce a digital signature that required energy to produce. Satoshi Nakamoto built on the ideas pioneered by Szabo and Back to create the first truly scarce digital good, bitcoins. Nakamoto's invention would never have been possible without the reframing of the seemingly simple concept of scarcity. All right, and that will close out the thread. Like I said, this was a really short one, but I just thought that was a really cool little lesson into how the way we picture things, the way we frame things in our mind is absolutely critical. And not only is it critical to how we apply those ideas, it's critical to how we assess things. And something that where the ultimate definition, the ultimate consequences of the two ideas are the same in regards to whether scarcity is a tangible, real thing or whether it's unforgeable costliness, the underlying economic understanding is essentially the same in both situations, but one would suggest it's not possible in the digital realm, and the other defines it in such a way that makes it clear we just need the tools in the digital realm, but we can recreate it, and makes Bitcoin understandable. And the fact that the cypherpunks are in fact the ones who made that breakthrough, who reframed scarcity in that way, Szabo in, I'm not sure where he actually created that first, where that term unforgeable costliness came from, but I know it's in Shelling Out the Origins of Money, which is a absolutely amazing essay. If you have not read it, definitely check that one out by Szabo. Maybe you can maybe hold out. That one might be on the show sometime soon. Wink, wink. But the fact that it was indeed the cypherpunks who made that transition is just amazing to me. What you essentially had was the Austrian theory was kind of one step higher. It started from the framing of the attributes or the known attributes, the known elements that made scarcity possible in the real world, and the reframing done by Szabo, and then subsequently its application or the actual recreation of it with Adam Back as unforgeable costliness is dropping like one level down. It's a more fundamental of, okay, how does the real world achieve this scarcity? What does that even mean in that context? So it's like the old Austrian theory of it being real, tangible, and a commodity of some sort is just a derivative of the more fundamental idea that that scarcity is a form of unforgeable costliness, regardless of whether you find it in the digital realm or the real world. And this is honestly one of the numerous reasons that if anybody deserves a Nobel Prize in economics, it would be Satoshi Nakamoto. Or maybe even Szabo, just because of his thought that his work that actually led up to it. But if you think about it, like Satoshi, I'm not trying to pump up the Nobel Prize in economics. In fact, many people, particularly in the Austrian school, would tell you that it's a really dubious award in the first place. And actually, Hayek, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he had a really, really amazing acceptance speech. And he said something along the lines that the Nobel Prize gives an individual a degree of authority in economics which no man ought to possess, and basically talked down about how it's essentially a political force which he sees as dangerous or anti the science of economics in that way. Not talking up the Nobel Prize at all. And it's not even a Nobel Prize. It's not, well, you know, whatever. We're not going to get into that. If anybody does deserve it, Satoshi Nakamoto arguably could be the most influential person to have ever won or been considered for such an award. Because not only was he an economic thinker that made, you know, breakthroughs in the concept to help it be translated into the digital world, Szabo too in that regard, but Satoshi, whoever he or they was a builder. They actually designed and constructed their money in the digital world and then released it into the wild. Like, you could never, no economist, regardless of, I mean, undeniably, there were many people who had, I mean, Rothbard, Hayek, like all these people had, Mises, had huge effects on the thinking in economics. And without their foundations, certainly Satoshi and the cypherpunks would never have made their next steps. It's critical. You got to do step one before you do step two. But at the same time, I don't think they nearly had the effect of building it into the real world, of making it work. I mean, they didn't have computers, like, so, you know, like, obviously there is a stage that they could never have crossed, but regardless, I think the time period in which Satoshi existed, the point in the thinking around sound money and economic scarcity and all of these concepts, and then the fact that he lived in the digital realm and was a cypherpunk and valued privacy and was building with these other people, and building off of Back's work and Szabo's work and all of these things, the recipe was just perfect to finally close all the gaps in that concept and build a digital money that was truly sound and truly understood the foundations of the ideas of scarcity and ultimately is changing in a massive way and will continue to do so likely indefinitely into the future. I don't see how any way you can get out of this that it's done. We can't go back. Like, this will absolutely change the world. It is changing the world. And that's just, there are very few economists who can boast such an unbelievable legacy. This was just a really cool concept. Like I said, it was a short one, but I just thought it was a really fun one to hit. And it's something that I don't think is, unless you point it out and detail it like Vijay did. Hats off to Vijay Boyapati for putting this together. It's just a short little tweet thread, but it really hits an awesome point that it was, in fact, the ideas of scarcity were, in fact, reframed by the cypherpunks in such a way to make them understandable and applicable in the digital realm. Otherwise, there would never have been an understanding, a foundation of understanding, in order to make something like Bitcoin possible. And Adam Back and Szabo were huge pieces of that. And there, I think there were others, obviously. You can't go into everything in a tweet thread, but what Satoshi Nakamoto built is undeniably a breakthrough in economics. I hope the Austrian school fully adopts the concepts and the study of Bitcoin in the future. I mean, they clearly have. The Mises Institute has been now huge into Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. But at first, there was definitely this resistance. It was very clear that they weren't at right out the gate willing to let go of their idea that it had to be tangible like gold. Rothbard was a brilliant thinker, and it's very hard to sit down and think, well, Rothbard was wrong. Yeah, with that, let's go ahead and close this one here. Don't want to go too long. Just thought that was really cool. A thank you to Vijay Boyapati, as usual, for his brilliant economic points and a little history lesson there that really articulated well something that's very hard to see unless you know it as well as Vijay does. He just knows Austrian economics in and out to be able to pinpoint that minute little difference that made everything change in the eyes of the cypherpunks. All right. Don't forget to follow Vijay Boyapati. If you are not, listen to our awesome discussion in Crypto Chat episode 7. Talking about all kinds of cool stuff. You don't want to miss that one. And of course, follow me on Twitter as well at The Crypto Economy. If you want to stay up with this show, subscribe to the show on iTunes or Podbean, however you listen to it, your podcast app. And you can follow me also on Mastodon at the BitcoinHackers.org instance, and Medium as well at The Crypto Economy. I'm at The Crypto Economy on Mastodon as well. Also check out the website at CryptoEconomy.life. And if you would like to support the show, I've got my donation address up there. I've got some affiliate links. I got affiliate links for some books I've been reading, The Drunkard's Walk, which is an excellent, it's really, really cool so far. I'm about, I don't know, maybe a fifth of the way through it at this point. It's just about how randomness rules our lives. And so often we build these narratives that even though we think, like, we build these narratives about why things happen in the world, that often randomness and probability actually explains it more thoroughly than these narratives that we tell ourselves. And then also a like brief study throughout all of these examples and this exploration of the concept of randomness. They talk about the history of randomness, where it came from, where probability came from, where, you know, the Greeks failed in these basic principles that you would think are almost obvious when you look at it now, but kind of how their framing was difficult. So it's just a really cool one called The Drunkard's Walk. So if you're interested in that, definitely check it out. Get it through my affiliate link, and that'll help out the show. Same with Mastering Bitcoin. Needs no introduction. Andreas Antonopoulos is amazing, and that book is the most thorough thing on how to understand and use Bitcoin and the both the architecture and just the software in general. You'll learn every command, all the pieces of the signatures, the whole mess. So if you're interested in that, you can also support Andreas and our show by getting that through my affiliate link. So both of those are great options. And of course, you can get your Trezor hardware wallet, which you've heard me talk about a million times. But it's a necessity if you are holding any significant amount of cryptocurrency. You can hold like 500 freaking coins on it. But obviously, you know me, I'm just going to have Bitcoin on it. But it's a wonderful, wonderful hardware wallet. So I got my affiliate link for that as well. So those are all ways that you can help keep this thing running and keep me caffeinated to have all this energy to talk into my microphone all day. All right. So thanks, guys, for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Stick with me, and we got some fun stuff lined up for next week. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.